love this podcast? Head to patreon.com/DATC Media Company to find out how you can show your support. DATC Media is very excited to be a Nugs.net official affiliate. Never miss the show. Nugs.net allows you to stream live concert audio and video in their app anytime, anywhere. Listen to last night's show with premium sound quality and official soundboard recordings. Watch a stacked archive of past live performances from countless artists and access future subscriber-exclusive live streams. Easily keep track of your tour highlights with shareable playlists and more. Take a scroll through and you'll quickly see why Nugs.net is my favorite app. Link in show notes to start your 7-day free trial. Nugs.net, where live music lives. I made this comment a couple of times over the run, over the weekend, and I'm sure I've said it a couple of times here on the show over the past 6 years, but I'm not a fan of tribute bands, cover bands, things like that, especially for artists that I can still go see. I've been like that even before Umphrey's was in my life. I just never loved it, and I never loved when I would go to see a band and they would do covers. I'm like, I'm not here to see you cover other people's music. That was really my stance on it for a very, very long time. And then Umphrey's came into my life, and that just absolutely changed everything. And I just thought that it was pretty funny that one of my favorite sets from the weekend was the All Night Wrong, was a cover-only set. And there was a point in my life where I just would have absolutely hated everything to do with my favorite band playing a set of covers. But, you know, there's a lot of personal feelings to a lot of those songs, of course, as well. So maybe that's mixed into it. But as I've said many, 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 many times, you know, Umphrey's could legitimately cover anything that they fucking wanted to and knock it out of the park. But they're not going to do that for a number of reasons. And, you know, that's something that I really respect about them. And, you know, all of these covers were just so well executed. And these are perfect gateways for people like me that are trying to get other people interested, or this is what I listen to and this is why I love it so much. These songs are great to play for somebody and be like, oh, well, they covered this, or especially something like Hunger Strike. Somebody that is an alternative fan, a Pearl Jam fan, you know, somebody's in that genre of music is their wheelhouse. There's no way that you wouldn't be impressed by Chris and Bayless's vocals on that. A member of the DATC Media family. Greetings, fellow music enthusiasts. Welcome to Dropped Among This Crowd podcast. This is your space to explore the role of music in our lives, our love for it, and the sense of community that it creates. Each episode of the show will feature a diverse selection of topics and insightful conversations revolving around three core themes: music, community, and Umphrey's McGee. I'm your host, Sarah J., and I'm thrilled to have you along for the ride. Are you prepared for what comes next? Thank you so much for joining me for this week of Dropped Among This Crowd. I'm your host, Sarah J., and I hope you're able to check out last week's episode, an exclusive re-air of the DATC Media presented live expert analysis panel that I did with Scott Marks and TJ Bannon on night two prior to kickoff. If you feel inclined, you can find that video over on YouTube. Thank you again to our sponsors, Driftless Mixology, Rough Gauge, and Internet FM. There are links in the show notes where you can check them out. And also in the show notes, a link to enter the contest Internet FM has going on for 2 GA passes for this year's Summer Camp Festival, Soulshine. I'm just going to continue to say summer camp. I don't know what to say. That giveaway is happening until May 15th. This week, I'm going to get all into Humble 10. And guys, I am just bursting with being able to finally get this out. I'm sure my kids are sick of listening to Humble on repeat for the last week-ish, little over a week when I'm recording this episode. It has just been my whole life. Even before that, obviously, here on the show, so many episodes leading up to the event and all the posts that I did leading up to the event, looking back on all the Humbles and then preparing for this year's big event. So there was a lot of Humble-ness going on here in my world for the past two-ish months or so. So it's going to be nice to finally put this to bed and get this out, and there's just a lot. So before we get into all of that, quickly, I want to mention that the winter spring edition of Crooked Conversations is in the very, very final edits, and it will be heading to the printers soon. I would love for it to go to the printers before the end of this week that I'm currently in. I would just love to finally get this off my plate. And shout out to new addition to the team, Nancy, who is just absolute fucking godsend. I am so excited to have her on the team. She has an extensive and impressive journalism resume on top of a multitude of other amazing skills and experience and knowledge and just all of the things. And I'm so, so very excited to have her on the team for a multitude of reasons. So she has been so helpful right from our first meeting, finally getting slowing myself down enough to sit down and have a meeting with her. And I'm glad that I did, because as soon as I asked her to take something off my plate for me, she was all for it and was absolutely amazing about it. And yeah, it was so great. So I'm excited to work with her. I'm excited what she's going to bring to the company. I'm excited what she's going to bring to the community through the company. And yeah, this is just going to be a really, really awesome thing. So thanks to her, she is really going to be focusing on the magazine for right now and helping with that. If you get the magazine, you know, you can see it is a lot of work to take on. So I am really grateful to have another set of hands, eyes, another brain in on that project so that it can continue to come to you guys, because otherwise it was just getting to be too much as everything else was growing. So anyway, that is going to be coming soon. So if you are a subscriber, no worries, you will get that in your mailbox. But if you are interested in getting a copy, this is your last call. I'm not printing any extras. What I order is what is going to be there. So if you want one, there is a link in the show notes where you can get that. And this week before I close the pre-orders, I'm going to be doing, I don't know, maybe a reel or a post or whatever I'm feeling, and go a little more in depth into what it actually entails inside the issue. This will cover from New Year's all the way through to February. Set lists are in there. All of the New Year's recap is in there. So that's kind of where we're at with everything in that issue. And then the next issue will be, you know, the rest of the year that has unfolded and the summer and cooking up something fun to do for Humble. So stay tuned for that. But if you're interested in the winter spring edition of Crooked Conversations, get on that, because like I said, I'm only printing what's ordered and you're not going to want to miss it. It's like 36 pages, and I don't know about you, but most magazines are all advertisements and crap. And the cool thing about this is that's not the case. It's all the content that we want and not a bunch of stupid advertising. And if there is advertising in there, it goes completely on brand with our community. So that's awesome. Usually it is a company that is owned by an umfreak. So that is the very cool thing about having your own company. All right, so let's get into this episode. There is a lot to go through, and I'm so grateful that you guys are gonna sit down and listen to me talk about these two nights. You can check out all the photos from the amazing Anna on the website. I uploaded those this morning. I did post a couple on Instagram. They only let you do 10. And then Facebook Fridays were a little grainy. I feel like there's something with the way that they were uploading. All of the photos from the two nights are up on the website, datcmediacompany.com, or there is a link in the show notes. I also wrote a review for Live for Live Music, and some of Anna's photos are included in that. At the time of this episode's recording, they have not yet published that. I know, well, part of it is because I didn't turn it in until last week. I needed a couple days to really digest everything and write it all out. It's a lot of material. And they were all down in New Orleans last week, so I know they were out of the office. So when that does get published, I will throw the link in the show notes, and then also keep an eye on the socials because, of course, I'll share it in my Insta stories and on Facebook and whatever. If you have not checked out these two nights, or if you didn't know, there is a live stream if you are a NUG subscriber that's free. If you're not a NUG subscriber, there is a link in the show notes where you can snag a 7-day free trial, and you'll be able to watch both of these nights of Humble in addition to the previous two nights of this run in Vermont. And I want to shout out Keith Greiner and his team at Fierce Productions for their hard work of making that possible for folks to watch at home. And I was actually driving to Boston while night one was going on. And so thanks to Keith and his team and the amazing power of technology, I was able to still be a part of what was happening live while I was driving to the event. Like, how fucking cool is that? Like, that's really, really fucking cool. So just wanted to shout out Keith and all of his hard work and awesome work. I've watched the stream several times since then, even though I was there on Saturday nights. And it's just his work is always so well done. Such a professional to work with and just a great guy overall. He is actually the much obliged submission, the much obliged article in this issue of Crooked Conversations that is going to be dropping very soon. Such a powerful, powerful story. He was also recently on an episode of their podcast, One Show at a Time. Just an awesome dude. Before we get into the music, I do want to talk about, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on this because I don't want to bring down, you know, the overall awesome vibe that was Humble. But I would be, it wouldn't be a full review or a full speaking of my experience of the event as I've done consistently for the past 6 years here on the show, which is crazy. The show just celebrated 6 years. Anyways, if I didn't talk about the venue and the issues that we had at the House of Blues in Boston, and I didn't go back and listen to the episode that I did from the last time the guys were there back in 2022. So I don't remember if I touched on this in that episode, but there was an issue back then in 2022, and that resulted in, funny enough, Nancy writing a letter to Live Nation and, you know, talking about this situation that had happened in 2022, et cetera, et cetera. And so we come back to the House of Blues, and I know that coming into the event, even prior to it being rescheduled, a lot of people were not happy about the House of Blues. I might have even said that in the times that I spoke about Humble. Again, I didn't go back and listen to anything that I said previously, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if I did say something, because just of the history. And I know not a lot of people like the House of Blues venues. I've heard there are a few that are good. I don't want to categorize all of them because I don't know where they're all located, and I haven't been to all of them, so I can't speak on that. But the experience that I've had with the House of Blues in Boston is not very good. And there were multiple circumstances from many people that I know personally very well, including my photographer, who had to deal with over-explaining what an EpiPen is to the security door person, which my first thing is, besides harassing a photographer who is obviously there to work and making her empty out her whole bag, which even if you're not a photographer, like, just somebody's going to have a lot of stuff and you're making them unpack their whole bag. Just, I'm not going to go on that tangent, guys. Anyway, but if you are a security guard and you're working with the public in the capacity of like a concert or a live event, like a sporting event or something where there's a lot of people, don't you think you would know what the fucking EpiPen is and what it looks like? And I don't know, probably know how to use one. So yeah, there were a lot of instances. I don't want to go into the whole story of what happened to my buddy, because I know the whole story, but for me to reiterate it, I know I would reiterate the story incorrectly. So I'm not going to, but there was a whole situation with my buddy and his partner, and, you know, they had to deal with whatever, and other people were not even able to get in for just asinine non-reasons, and to the point where somebody who was not able to get in, management and crew for the band tried to get this fan back into the show, and even they could not because of the way that the venue was being. There's a lot of layers to this. Nancy wrote another letter and included the situation with Anna and, you know, her EpiPen at security. And so therefore I was, you know, circled into the email chain. And we've only gotten one email back from Live Nation so far, saying that they were going to look into the situation a little further. That was about a weekish ago. Time is so weird to deal with that. But I guess I'll keep you guys posted to see what becomes of that. But I know that there are a lot of fans that are very unhappy going into Humble being at the House of Blues. I know a lot of people said to me even then, that while we were there, if it wasn't Humble that was at this venue, they wouldn't have even gone if it was just a regular two-night run there. I would echo that as well. Even before going and, you know, even sitting here now, I would say that going into it, I wouldn't have gone if it wasn't for Humble. If I haven't already said that, but I kind of feel like if I go back and listen to episodes where we're talking about Humble 10, I'm pretty sure I would have at least said that once. So that was kind of, you know, a damper on the events, but everybody pushed it aside and still had a great fucking time. But of course, we're going to speak up because this is not okay. And, you know, it made me think about the people that come to the House of Blues and don't have the venue experience that so many of us do, that we go to so many venues all over the country and we have experience with security at venues all over the country, all over the world in some cases. But that is most likely not the case with a lot of people that come there, would be my assumption. You know, people that just live in the area and come to a show when there's a band there. And so if that's what's going on there, they need to know that also, because nobody should be treated or hassled or anything like what was going on with us. So just wanted to kind of throw that out there. And if for some reason you're listening to this and you had some kind of situation go down, I'm just throwing this out there for some reason. But if you're listening to this and you had some kind of something go down while you were there and you want to say something about it, like, feel free to reach out to me. We do have a channel to Live Nation and to the House of Blues. You know, we've also circled in Umphrey's management into these letters. So, you know, I don't know. I just felt like to say that if you're listening to this and something happened, something came up, and you feel like it would be important for us to include that into any sort of communication with the venue or Live Nation, feel free to reach out to me. Social media, email addresses are in the show notes. I check all the things. So yeah, feel free to reach out. And yeah, I just wanted to kind of bring that up. And so that's it. We're going to move on now and get into talking about some music. So night one, set one, band's choice. And I thought this made perfect sense for the guys to go with this one first. If you had the sets all laid out, looking at them, this one is the easiest of the six for them to execute. And considering that they played the previous two nights in Vermont, two absolutely incredible shows, by the way, Wednesday in Burlington was just amazing. And Joel even remarked that he thought it could be show of the year contender. I do not disagree with that statement. I also think that the first night in Charleston could be included in that list as well, but that's all for another episode. But yeah, it just made perfect sense, I guess, to me to go this direction, and also a really nice segue for everybody to go from Umphrey's to the uniqueness that is Humble. It just felt really right. And the way that they put the choose your own adventure at the end of, you know, set three, which I'm getting ahead of myself, but yes, it just made sense to bookend it with the two Umphrey's-esque sets in the front and in the back. So this first set, a very solid four-song set, and the only thing better than a five-song set, which we love, is a four-song set. I actually had somebody stop me after night two, and we were joking about the five-song set thing, and you know, he's like, you know, we love the one-song set. And I'm like, we do, but we're not going to be greedy. We're not going to be greedy. And it was really great, like really fun interaction in the end there. But yeah, you know, we love a four-song set. So Staircase opener. And this one saw some pretty solid expansion. And as I've said many times here on the show, it has been a lot of fun to watch them become so comfortable with that so quickly. And it's only a little over a year old, debuted, I'm not looking at a note right now on this, but March of 2023. I don't have an exact date off the top of my head, but if I can remember correctly, it was during that Pacific Northwest run in March of 2023. So a little over a year old, and it has seen a lot of growth in a short amount of time. So It'll be interesting to see if that growth is consistent or if it's just because it's got that new car smell on it. But so far, it's really, really had a lot of fun time out, and it's really kind of shown that they're very comfortable with it as well. Building up and exploding, spilling out perfectly into 40s, and a perfect bridgeless sandwich with the triple wide stuffed in the middle. And I will say, like I've said many, many times, Umphrey's knows how to write a set list anyways, but then with the laying out of these six sets over the two nights, I think just overall very well executed from set one on Friday to set three on Saturday. That bridgeless, triple wide bridgeless, I did throw that on my 2024 highlights list. On to set two, which is the Stu Art event. And for anyone listening who maybe has no idea what the fuck a Stu Art is, it is a set of live fan-driven improv determined in real time via text message by the fans in attendance. Last year, you could vote in from home. I think that you could also do that this year. I'm not sure. But either way, if you're in attendance, there is the screen and it's, you know, the themes are chosen. You text them in and then they're projected onto a screen behind the band. And a fun fact for you, although S2 events have been a part of Humble since the inaugural year in 2010, we have yet to see a submission become something that Humphreys has kept a part of its regular repertoire. So very interesting. This year, I kind of felt like there were some things that might, you know, might be back pocketed. We'll see. But this year's winners, Drum and Brace Yourself, Party on a Beach in Morocco, Sludge and Dub, obviously a reggae version of Sludge and Death. Any opportunity that Bayless gets to do his reggae, like last year's Humble with Vader. I can't remember the whole thing, but it was his Vader thing. Yeah. Jake conducts, Medeski, Martin, and Humphreys. And according to All Things Humphreys, that would also contain an all-in-time Q-Bert and mail package teases. Follow the Ben and Lights Dictate the Jam. Ben did a whole post on social media. I was actually going to, let me pull it up here on my phone. He was talking about The Weeknd. He did this whole post, and it was a very cool post also because he was talking about how it was a full circle moment for him as well, because he had been to Humble, this is Humble 5 in 2014. So 10 years later, he was, you know, not only working for the band, the whole story of him working for the band and everything, but now he was able to orchestrate a part of the S2 set. And so he did this whole post a couple of days ago. This is 4 days ago on the post that I'm looking at. If you're not following him on Instagram, it's BP Factor. And so he wrote a really cool thing, not only talking about the mechanics of what he was doing over the weekend and shared some photos of just awesome, phenomenal work that he did through each set and then the movie scene set. We're getting ahead of ourselves here, but, you know, obviously talking about Ben here. So he shares a whole bunch of stuff about that. And then the last slide, he shows a picture of himself and a buddy of his at Humble 5 10 years ago. And you know I love shit like that. So if you haven't read that post, definitely give it a read. It's just so awesome. So this was cool to see and then to read his take on the whole situation. Getting back to this S2, just learned how to play last week. And this one was particularly funny to me because there were points where they would just start to play really well because they've been a band for 25 years. And so they just meld together, just what they do. And so there would be points where they would start to play really well. And then one of them would go, wait, no, we're supposed to be playing like we just learned how to play last week. And so that was kind of comical to me that it was hard for them to play like a newbie when you're such a pro, you know. So it's pretty funny. Chicago Subway at Midnight, that was a lot of fun. One string only, everyone on keys, now the drums. And play your favorite song, which Bayless regaled us with his favorite song, which revealed to be Puff the Magic Dragon by Peter, Paul, and Mary. However, this is not your childhood bedtime being sung by your grandma version. This is the Brendan Bayless version of Puff the Magic Dragon. And Stasek and Joel are sitting on the stage, you know, doe-eyed up at him. Like, it's story, Uncle Brendan's story time. And, you know, proceeds to regale us with this comical version of Puff the Magic Dragon. So that in itself was just worth the whole S2 set for sure. And apparently back during the South Carolina run and then the two nights in Wilmington, that first night in Wilmington got all fucked up because of the rain. And during the first time they called it off and the guys were backstage, I think it was Stasek I had seen in his Insta stories, and Bayless was singing that backstage. So it was funny to see the full extent of Puff the Magic Dragon, according to Brendan Bayless. So, yeah, that's really great. And because, as Bayless said, you can't end it on Puff the Magic Dragon, they ended it with the appropriate Daring Escape. That brings us to set three of night one, All Night Wrong. And guys, if you have been hanging out here for a while, you know exactly how I feel about what was played during this set. Especially if you listen to any of the Humble episodes that predate this episode, the ones where I spoke about my ballad choices. So, yes, you will not be surprised by any of the feelings I have about any of this. Or if you follow my Insta stories, because I've been trying to manifest some of these things and then they came to fruition. So I am super stoked about this. So, first up, Roundabout, originally found on Yes's 1971 Fragile album, covered 11 times now, last played September 3rd, 2020, 257 shows. Guys, if you listened to last week's episode, you know how I felt when this was happening. And I made a reel about it because I was just so like, oh my God, it's actually happening. As Scott Mark said in our chat, there's been so many Roundabout fakeouts throughout the years. And like, it's actually fucking happening. Like, it's actually happening. So that was just amazing. Kid Charlemagne, originally found on Steely Dan's 1976 The Royal Scam album, covered 5 times now, last time played March 11th, 2017, 537 shows. That saw some very, very nice expansion. They always do Steely Dan really fucking proper, really proper. Plush, originally found on the Stone Temple Pilots' 1993 debut album, Core, covered only 3 times now, last time played May 19th, 2018, 432 shows. And guys. Oh my gosh. Cult of Personality, originally found on Living Colors' 1998 Vivid album, covered only 3 times now. Last time played February 11th, 2022, 188 show gap. Fun fact, the last time that was covered, they were in Boston at the House of Blues. And that was the last time that we were there, too. Hunger Strike, originally found on Temple of the Dog's 1991 soul studio album of the same name, only covered one other time besides this one here, last time played May 18th, 2017, 520 show gap. And they, of course, just I'm freezed all over this. I'm trying to make that a verb. I'm trying to figure out how to like say it correctly. I'm freezed. How to spell it on Insta stories and stuff. Yeah, that was just everything that I wanted it to be and so much more. And I'm totally going to say that about something that is coming soon in this episode that we're going to discuss. But again, if you've been listening to the show leading up to Humble, been following my Insta stories, you know that I've been wanting this hunger strike. And I spoke about Chris and Bayless and just thinking about their vocals, and it happened. And I was so emotional about it because it was amazing. It was beautiful. So yeah, just all of it. The band playing it, just all of it was so, so good. And it's such a 90s grunge rock anthem banger. It's just so good. And Chris and Bayless is just the two of them vocally. It was so beautiful. And then, of course, for them to add their own spice on the whole thing. So well done, guys. So well done. Rounding this out with No More Tears, originally found on Ozzy Osbourne's 1991 album of the same name. The one of this set to see the most times played at 21 times total. Last time played February 4th, 2023, 111 show gap. And that will bring us to our special guest of the evening, Cousin Eli, for a cover of Big Papa, originally found on Notorious B.I.G.'s 1994 Ready to Die album. I did not make the note in here, so I'm going to open this because, of course, I have All Things Unfreeze opened on my desktop here. But I do want to say this. Okay, so here it is. Covered three times total. Last time was June 20th, 2021 at Red Rocks. And it's only the second time with Andy on the vocals. The debut of that back in 2013 was an instrumental with Brendan on keys. So that's a fun little random fact for you. And it's always nice when Andy gets on the mic. Anna got an amazing photo of him. It's up on the website. I posted it on social too, of him on the mic getting crouching down. That's such a great shot of him. And we'll also get the treat of Cousin Eli twice over the weekend, which we will we'll get to that. And, you know, I made this comment a couple of times over the run, over the weekend, and I'm sure I've said it a couple of times here on the show over the past 6 years, but I'm not a fan of tribute bands, cover bands, things like that, especially for artists that I can still go see. I've been like that even before Humphreys was in my life. I just never loved it, and I never loved when I would go to see a band and they would do covers. I'm like, I'm not here to see you cover other people's music. That was really my stance on it for a very, very long time. And then Humphreys came into my life, and that just absolutely changed everything. And I just thought that it was pretty funny that one of my favorite sets from the weekend was the All Night Wrong, was a cover-only set. And there was a point in my life where I just would have absolutely hated everything to do with my favorite band playing a set of covers. But you know, there's a lot of personal feelings to a lot of those songs, of course, as well. So maybe that's mixed into it. But as I've said many, 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 many times just discussing it, but many times also here on the show, you know, Humphreys could legitimately cover anything that they fucking wanted to and knock it out of the park. But they're not going to do that for a number of reasons. And, you know, that's something that I really respect about them. And, you know, all of these covers were just so well executed. And like I've said many times also, these are perfect gateways for people like me that are trying to get other people interested, or this is what I listen to and this is why I love it so much. These songs are great to play for somebody and be like, oh, well, they covered this, or especially something like Hunger Strike. You know, somebody that is an alternative fan, a Pearl Jam fan, you know, somebody's in that genre of music is their wheelhouse. there's no way that you wouldn't be impressed by Chris and Bayless's vocals on that. So I just think that it was a really well-executed set, and I just loved everything about it. Moving on to night two, before kickoff, like I mentioned at the top of the show, I went live on YouTube for a night one discussion, night two prediction, overall 45-minute nerd out with Scott Marks and TJ Bannon. That was on last week's episode, or you can check the video out over on DATC Media's YouTube channel. And there was still so much on deck going into night two. It was amazing when I actually sat down and thought about it right before I went live on YouTube, thinking about what was still ahead for us. I'm like, oh my God, there's still a lot of music for us to digest. First up was the live scoring film set. And that was really, really intense to witness in person on the rail. I mean, of course, I'm in my spot, and there were parts of it that were a little intense, I will admit. Some of that just kind of has to do with my own sort of processing of intense movie scenes. But it was also incredibly interesting to watch. I am also very honored. Like, I feel very grateful that I was able to watch them do that in person in real time, especially being a fan for as long as I have. And I've seen this band do so many things and, you know, researching all these things and doing the show and talking about the music and the show so constantly. It was very, very cool to see this and watch them create this way. And just the intensity, you know, and Jake's face and Bayless just watching the TV screens they had. And then Chris had a little screen next to him and his kit. And, you know, just watching them do this. And Jake had his notepad and he's flipping back and forth and doing the notes and whatever. And it was just a very interesting thing, like a live, immersive theater sort of thing. I know Danny Elfman was doing like Nightmare Before Christmas and he had a live band. And then they had the movie behind him, you know, so it's very similar to that. And it was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. The movies that were chosen are, you know, not movies that either I haven't seen them or I've only seen them once. Again, you know, I'm very mindful about the movies that I watch. Some violent stuff is a little too much for me personally. And I will say on that note that there is no other band that I would have felt comfortable enough with to ride that out with, to stand there and consume these intense movie scenes with this music that, of course, the music is going to build to the intensity of the moment. It's going to build to the feels. And so there's no other band that I would have stood there and rode that out and been like, I want to see where this is going to go. Honest to God, any other band, I would have been like, I have to go and get some air or some water or something. I need to sit down. And I was just so intrigued by wanting to see what they were going to do next. And like I said in my article for Live for Live Music, this set really showed their musical prowess individually and collectively. And then I posed the question, could there be an original film score in the works for the band? Brendan and Jake have done it for the 2021 horror and suspense film The Canyonlands. And if you've been a longtime listener, I have brought that film up many, many times since it was released. The director was actually a guest here on the show, Brendan Devane. I'll throw a link in the show notes if you're interested in going back and listening to that. And I will also link where you can watch the film if you're also interested in that. But yeah, this set was amazing. And if you haven't checked this out yet, honestly, do. Like, I think you really should at least watch it once, but take the time to watch it for the first time. Don't just listen to it on Nugs. Watch this on the stream the very first time. Otherwise, you're just not going to get the full scope of what's unfolding with the particular scene, that's going on. So, the films featured during the set, they did a little history of movies montage. Then they did Nosferatu, Mad Max Fury Road, Pulp Fiction, The Blues Brothers, Pan's Labyrinth, Interstellar, Caddyshack, and Kill Bill Volume 1. So, yeah, reading that list, I'm sure you can tell why I said what I said. I mean, some of those movies I've seen. I think Pan's Labyrinth was the only movie on that list that I actually have. Mad Max, I've never seen that full movie. So, those were the only two that I haven't seen. The Mad Max Fury scene was very intense. Long, I think maybe that was the longest one. I'm going to pull this up quick on Nugs and see what was the longest of the timestamps for that. The Blues Brothers. Okay, the Blues Brothers was the longest piece that they did that came in at a little over 12 minutes, but then Mad Max Fury Road was a little over 11 minutes. But yeah, it was so creative and so just, again, it was incredible to watch them create like that. So take the time and watch that, even if you only watch it once, and Keith's work on that, capturing that to the stream for the folks at home, he did an amazing job. So yeah, just incredible. There's really not a lot that I can elaborate on that other than, just watch it because there's really nothing that I'm going to say that's going to do that justice. So definitely take the time and check that out. So, set two, the new set, a new cover, the new Ross Dew song, a new original never played, and a new mashup. First up, a new cover, Sultans of Swing, originally found on Dire Straits' 1978 self-titled debut studio album. And guys, okay. So if you've been along with me on this podcast ride for a while, which my assumption is that's the case, you know that I've brought up my dad many, 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 many times. He's always comes up. And if you know me, you know that my dad is a significant person in my life. I've spoken about Mark Knopfler. I've spoken about Dire Straits. I've talked about all the things here on the show over the years. And I even brought it up, the significance of this song and all the things when I was talking about my ballad choices. And if you know me, you know I love me some good manifestations. So here is another great story for you. So we are getting ready to go to night two, and we are in the car, and my buddy Brent brings up, oh, you should manifest Mark Knopfler and Jake coming together and, getting to play some music together. And I'm like, dude, don't even get me started. Blah, blah, blah. Go down the whole rabbit hole, talk about my dad, whose birthday was only a couple days later. And then come to find out it's the same day as my buddy Brent's. And so we start going down this whole Dire Straits, Mark Knopfler rabbit hole about them covering this and this, and oh, they should really do this. And, we're just going down this whole thing. As we're walking to the House of Blues, night two, okay? So we get to the venue, we're seeing everybody doing whatever, blah, 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 blah. So we go through the first set, we're like, holy fuck, that was intense, everything else. We get ready for set two. I'm on the rail, Brent is right behind me, and they fucking go into Dire Straits. And I turned around, and the look on his face like, I can only imagine what the look on my face was, because the look on his face was like, holy fuck. So this would have been an oh my God moment anyways, because of all of the pieces that personally were mixed into this. But then because we had talked about that earlier, and coupled with the fact that my dad's birthday was coming up and I found out that it was the same as Brent's, and just a lot of things mixed into it, I've listened to this version so many times, you guys. And to add to the layers of this, Brendan is using one of Jake's GNLs to ensure that while Jake is focused on the vocals, which he slayed, Brendan's lead guitar parts, which he also slayed, which is fucking crazy because I love Bayless's guitar playing too. Like, Bayless is a phenomenal guitar player too. But I will admit that when I was manifesting this cover, I was giving all of the lead guitar parts to Jake. I will admit that. But then Bayless comes in and he's rocking Jake's GNL and just absolutely rips this apart. The reason why is so that the tone coming from him during those parts was on brand to Knopfler's sound, because his PRS is not going to give it the tone that that song needed. Which then led me down an entire whole other thing of my childhood and my upbringing and all the stuff that my dad used to play for me, and then going, oh, now I get why I love his tone so much, and why I love GNL guitars so much, and why I love this. Oh, I get it now. Like, oh, I see. And if that wasn't enough, they umfreeze all over the back half of that and journeyed into a new Ross Stew song, Concessions, containing January 18th, 2014, 1348, September 14th, 2007, Nemo, and that January 14th, 2023, The Silent Type that I've talked about, and I mentioned it was on my Ross Stew ballad and my Hall of Fame ballad, and we got in a pretty big conversation about The Silent Type prior to night two, and I brought up this particular version, January 14th, 2023, while Silent Type is maybe not my favorite song, it is a hell of a jam vehicle, obviously. And I will say that first of all, I bawled my fucking eyes out during this, so there's that. And after several listens, I honestly feel like this should be two songs. Like, put it on an album back to back, but you don't necessarily always have to play it together every single time. I think that it would be kind of cool that if we did that in the future, it would be like a will they or won't they go into the next chapter? Will they whatever? Will we just have this? And then, you know, very Pink Floyd-esque. I just think that the more that I listen to this, that it's actually two songs in a way. That's just how I felt. Kind of cut it off about 10-ish minutes before it falls down that rabbit hole. And honestly, just draconian the second half of that. That's how I feel about it. After listening to it for so many times, I wouldn't completely scrap the front half of that song. There's a lot of potential there. And again, there's a lot of potential for this. The first time it was played live, like, there's so much going back to the drawing board of this. Obviously, there's a lot more in this song's future, for sure. But that is my first feeling of this, seeing it live, listening to it numerous times. That's my first take on it this first time out. I think that, you know, make it into two songs and kind of have that sort of will they or won't they vibe around, you know, that in the future. But we'll see. I'm very excited to see what is to come of that song, because it's just, I mean, it's a great song. Even if we keep it together, whatever, I mean, it's a really, really great song. And the fact that I was bawling my eyes out during it, and there were many other people that have said they did the same thing, evoked a lot of feels for us fans. So they're going to definitely be working on that to see what they can do with it, for sure. Next up, Work Sauce. Only one of the two songs from Asking for a Friend that had yet to see live play. The last one that we're waiting on, How About Now, which is kind of pretty funny if you think about it. This first time out for Work Sauce was a lot of fun. In my personal opinion, worth the wait. I'm glad that they made sure that they were feeling really confident with it musically and vocally to bring it out. And so much so that we saw nice expansion from this, kind of like, okay, go ahead and take a nice little test drive around and see how we feel. And it landed very nicely back into Work Sauce slightly before 4.5. So give or take about 2.5 minutes, very nice amount of time for them to see if this is going to be conducive to their repertoire. I hope we see more of that one, and I have a feeling that we will. Closing out this new set with a new mashup, House of Better Glass, featuring Jump Around by House of Pain, House of Glass by Blondie, and The Less I Know the Better, Tame Impala. And we were getting some previews of this from Joel, if you go back and listen to the spring shows. There were some, you know, mixes of this in there, thanks to Joel. He was kind of peppering them in. And before we got into it, Bayless, there's a video of this too on the band's social. It's probably on their YouTube too. So Bayless is saying to the crowd, before we get to this next one, we got to, you know, do it properly. Everybody's got to get down. And so we're all looking around like, what the fuck is he talking about? He's like, get, you know, get down, get lower, get down. So eventually, like, Jake crouches down and everybody's like, oh, okay. So we're like crouching down. He's like, of course, you gotta make a comment about all the old folks in the room, you know. So he's, everybody, you'll know what you'll know what to do, you know what to do. And so we're all like, what the fuck? I'm really getting down. And as soon as Joel hits the opening notes of Jump Around, it was hilarious to see the House of Blues erupt in just like a 90s high school gymnasium on a Saturday night. Like, it was a high school dance in the 90s, and the fucking DJ started this song, and everybody's like, ah! It was so funny, and it's great to watch on the video too. It was a lot of fun, and there was an interpreter. I don't think I mentioned this earlier in this episode. So there was an interpreter in the house on night two, and Bayless had addressed her, I think it was right before this maybe, or if it was before Work Sauce. Anyways, it was after the first set because he apologized for not having anything to sign in the first set because it was just the movie soundtrack. And so he had addressed the interpreter earlier in this second set and, of course, you know, wants to know what it would look like if he said a bad word, like fuck, and got his answer. And later on asked what it would look like if he said cock and balls. You know, this is typical Bayless stuff, of course. But I will say, during this mashup, the interpreter was definitely not sure what the hell was going on. So I want to interview the interpreter. Like, I want to know what their interpretation, ha ha ha, was of that, just that whole night. I'm sure it's like, okay, this is very interesting. But I will say, seeing everybody jumping around, falsetto Bayless singing Debbie Harry, Chris on vocals, another appearance by Cousin Eli, win, 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 motherfucking win. Love this and love them so much. So much. So, so much fun. So much fun. All right, so that brings us to the final set of the weekend, Choose Your Own Adventure. And if you don't know what that is, reminiscent of the books popular in the 1980s, where you would choose between two scenarios, and if you would choose this one, the adventure would continue along this way, and if you would choose this one, it would continue along the other way. So first up, 1348, followed by Glory, and there was so much controversy about this one winning, and I will admit, I love me some Glory, but I will agree with the folks that it would have been nice to go with one of the other tunes that it was up against, Kimball or Kula. Kula was my vote. I don't know how that whole voting thing worked. I feel like that a lot of the people in attendance at Humble would be people that would get Glory pretty regularly in their setlist rotation. So I'm surprised that won. Honestly, I think the guys kind of were too. I kind of feel like they also were wanting to play not Glory again. Even Jake was probably like, let's play Kula maybe, because that would be fun to come out of 1348. It also felt like the vibe was way better to go that way than with Glory. But as Bayla said, this was our fault. But I love how they took the back half of that and just opened it up so nicely. Definitely making themselves, I'm sure, a little bit, but also the folks that were not happy with the outcome of Glory being played. You know, they couldn't complain with where that wound up because it was very nicely executed. Bad Friday next, which was a 50-50 between Miami Virtue, and it sat like that for quite a while to the point where Joel even voted for Bad Friday, didn't sway anything. Bayless asked the interpreter, wound up doing a, you know, make some noise, the song with the loudest noise gets the vote, which wound up being Bad Friday. I think that they should have done a mashup of Bad Friday and Miami Virtue and made it like a Bad Virtue. That would have been a fucking sick mashup. Bad Virtue. Yeah, let's fucking do that, guys. I texted Scott Marks that during the show too. I was like, they should do a mashup, Cowards. That's a reference to what we said during our chat on YouTube. So go back and listen to that. We're called the guys Cowards. Night Nurse next. That was up against Day Nurse. So, of course, I picked Night Nurse. I've always said my favorite of my nurses. And I did actually throw that on my 2024 highlights list. Making Flippy Floppy, another 50-50 between this and another Talking Heads tune, Girlfriend is Better. Making Flippy Floppy wound up winning by a hair. Found on the Talking Heads 1983 Speaking in Tongues album. This has been covered by the band 85 times now. Last time prior to this was earlier in the year at Belly Up on March 8th. And just in case, because I wanted to know, and I'm sure you might too, Girlfriend is Better has been covered only 32 times total. And we last saw that September 14th, 2023 in Salt Lake City, Utah. Closing out the Choose Your Own Adventure with a fire plunger. I really wasn't sure if that's how I wanted this to end. I wasn't feeling very confident with that's how this was going to go. I've seen plunger so many times, but it consistently shows up, and this one was a hell of a version. I also threw that on my highlights list. Encore for the evening, a little comedy bit before we get it back into the music. On the set list as Puff Smash, Bayless came out and said that, you know, somebody was offended by his rendition of Puff the Magic Dragon the day before, and, you know, he was going to add another verse to it. And, you know, Stasic just not fucking having that. So he proceeds to come out and smash the guitar and goes into the crowd and everything. And I'm going to say, like, Jake, don't frisbee the acoustic out into the audience again. I was like, oh my God, somebody's going to get hurt. Like, my mother instincts, like, took over. I was like, oh my God. Thankfully, nobody did. I saw a post that somebody got, like, a, you know, a cut on their hand and it wasn't bad. But yeah, dude. No. Anyway, closing out Humble 10 with the debut of the Top Gun anthem, with the conclusion of 1348 that opened the Choose Your Own Adventure set. Perfect choice ending, again with the film in the background, and just the perfect vibe for victory lap for the two nights of Humble. And really for anybody who was along for the ride with the guys since Wednesday in Vermont, this was actually more like a 5-night run for those folks, if you think about it, because Humble has an extra set each night. So technically, people that were on this whole stretch of shows, it was actually like a 5-night run because there's just so much to digest from Humble. So it was a perfect way to end the evening, a nice victory lap for all of us, and the band included. I mean, those guys just consistently knock it out of the park every time for Humble, and the amount of prep and time and thought and just work and everything else, the band, the crew, management, everybody involved. Incredible job, guys. Thank you so much for doing this. We just absolutely love it and have a great time. Just not at the House of Blues in Boston again. Please, let's find a better place to do this for Humble 11. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I would probably give this, people are rating it on Velociraptors, I'd probably give this one about an 8 out of 10. Again, my favorite Humbles are 9 and 4, if anybody cares. but those are my favorite Humbles. But this one I would give an 8 out of 10. So, yeah, definitely dive into the sets. If you haven't, take some time and watch that movie set because it is incredible to witness. And, yeah, guys, that's everything I have for this week. Thank you so much for joining me for today's episode. Please be sure to leave a review of the show. It would mean so much to me, and it helps get this podcast into the ears of even more fellow music fans. If you're not already following the show on social media, find us on Facebook and Instagram at Dropped Among This Crowd Podcast, or check out DATCmediacompany.com for more. Thank you again. I'll see you around these parts real soon. Mad love.